This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK12. And by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 122, They've Leflerized the World. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Daniel Prue. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a TNG reunion in Germany hosted by Shatner, Star Trek Renegades, and Larry Nemechek and Terrace Cassidy pop in to talk about Geek Nation tours. We also preview two more tracks from Five-Year Missions Year 3 and answer questions from the fleet. Then in the feature, we're joined by Darren Moser and Philip Gilfus to discuss the TNG episode, The Game. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Daniel. It's great to have you back on the Ready Room with me this week. It looks like it's time for us to all partake of a cup of Earl Grey.
Yes, indeed. Hi, Chris. How are you? It's been a little while since I've been on the Ready Room. I think over a month for sure. So I'm excited to be back here and to offer the first few drops of the Earl Grey cup that we will be partaking in this episode.
Very good. Yeah, I guess last time you were on was the last time we were on TNG, right? Which would have been 5, maybe 6 weeks ago, since we just had Five-Year Mission special show last week.
Yeah. Yes, it was. It's been that long, so it's been a bit of a break. But I'm ready to jump right into it. So,
all right. Well, how's everything going for you though during that time since you've been away? I know our listeners can catch you on Earl Grey every week, but for those who haven't heard your show, what's been happening?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we are the TNG show, so I mean, you should come to us for all things TNG. Obviously, we do spend a lot of time talking about fish of various sizes. You know, we talk about Livingston, we talk about Commander Flipper, but occasionally we'll talk about, you know, Picard and Riker and all your favorites. So you should definitely check us out for sure.
Occasionally you get to the actual human crew members.
Well,
not
yes.
Just the fish that are on the ship.
Yeah. The thing is, if you watch TNG and you pay attention, you'll definitely see who's actually pulling the strings behind the curtain. So,
well, and that actually leads me to our first story here, Daniel. I have to ask you if you have any behind-the-scenes information about this news that there's going to be a TNG cast reunion at Destination Star Trek Germany. Now, some people may be excited about the news that William Shatner is actually going to moderate the session. What I want to know, however, is that it's confirmed that Frakes is going to be there, Surtees is going to be there, Dorn, McFadden, Spiner, and now LeVar Burton has signed on. Is Livingston going to be there? Are they going to have a fishbowl on the stage?
Well, Chris, if I told you that, I would have to kill you, unfortunately. Being a Section 31 agent, I'm not allowed to divulge any information about Livingston. What I will say is that even if he's not physically present, he'll be there.
He's always in the shadows somewhere, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
So this is going to be another reunion. We've had a couple of TNG cast reunions now over the past year or so. And it's always fun when you get these guys together, because I really feel, and tell me if you feel this way as well, there's something about the TNG cast, when they all get together on a stage, it seems that they all like each other so much more than the other casts did. I don't know if you have seen on the Enterprise Season 2 Blu-rays, there's the cast reunion of the Enterprise crew,
And some of them get along really great, but then you've got these awkward moments, like the way Jolene Blaylock is sitting there next to Brennan. You've got Linda over there who's just really, really quiet the whole time. But when the TNG crew gets together, it's just a party.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the brand new stuff from the season 2 Blu-ray and stuff from Enterprise, but I have seen plenty of interviews with the various casts. And I don't think there can be any doubt that the TNG cast definitely is the closest of all of the casts. And it really is lovely. Like, I went to see I think it was the season 2 theatrical Blu-ray event release, and it was lovely to see, you know, all of those people talking to each other and about each other. And you can tell these people, like, and we see these pictures all the time on Twitter, on Facebook. Like, we see, you know, they're hanging out for holidays, or they go over to each other's houses for birthdays and stuff. So yeah, I'm excited any chance that we get to see, you know, 90% or more of them hang out on the stage together.
Most definitely. Well, besides the TNG cast, there are some other guests who are already confirmed for Destination Star Trek Germany. And those include, from Deep Space Nine, René Auberjonois, Armin Shimerman, and Casey Biggs. And from Enterprise and many other appearances throughout Star Trek, Vaughn Armstrong.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's like we have 90% of TNG. We have some bit players from Deep Space Nine, and then we have Vaughn Armstrong, which I guess can represent lots of other things. But so it's a cool panel, definitely. But the big, definitely looks like the big thing to look out for is the TNG Shatner,
yeah,
little reunion.
I have a feeling that by the time this rolls around, because this convention is going to take place on February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of next year, we'll probably have a huge panel. I think we're going to have actors from all the series signing on, because I don't remember exactly 3 months out leading into Destination Star Trek London. I don't remember how many people had signed on, but by the time the con actually took place, it was just a massive event. And I expect we'll see something similar here.
Yeah. I mean, I hope, you know, for the people that actually get to go in Germany, maybe they can find a way to get Patrick Stewart. I mean, he's the only one missing from the TNG reunion. And I don't know, maybe he's busy because he's always busy being awesome. But maybe perhaps they can get Ashley Judd.
I hope. You really can't have a TNG cast reunion without Ashley Judd. It's just incomplete.
I don't see how. I mean, it makes no sense. She's the gel that holds that group together for sure.
She really is. I think I have an idea. I know how to get Patrick Stewart to Destination Star Trek Germany. We need to arrange a meeting with Patrick Stewart and Angela Merkel. And Merkel is going to give Patrick Stewart this little device that he puts on. It's going to hypnotize him into feeling great anytime he's in Germany. And therefore, he's going to have to go.
That's a great idea. I actually have an idea as well. If you could convince Ian McKellen to come, apparently those two are inseparable. Yes. These days, and Patrick Stewart would just have to show up, and so they could tweet all their pictures of silly hats and, you know, various locations together. So that would also work.
Right. It's not even a case of, okay, we got Ian to come and he talked Patrick into coming. Patrick will just say, Ian was coming, and, you know, I'm always with him anyway, so here I am.
They're basically inseparable. It's adorable and a little weird all at the same time.
So this is going to be produced by Media 10 with Showmasters Limited, just like the London event last year. Again, February 21st to 23rd at the Messe in Frankfurt. Tickets are available now. If you go to DestinationStarTrek.com, you can get more information and purchase tickets. And you can find them on Twitter under the very catchy username StarTrek_DST. Or you can become a fan on Facebook as well, Destination Star Trek over there at Facebook.com. And we'll keep you updated as we get more information on the event. Okay, Daniel, we talked a lot about Livingston being a Section 31 agent, and dare I say, a renegade. And Star Trek Renegades just released a teaser trailer. Did you have a chance to watch this?
I did. It's interesting. I'm actually looking forward to hearing your opinion on it, because
okay,
it's very different from and obviously as a fan thing, of course they have creative right to do whatever they want with it. But what do you, I mean, how do you feel about the teaser trailer?
Oh, the teaser trailer itself, not really that fond of it, just because I don't feel like it tells me much about, because I already know what the premise of Renegades is. And so when I watched the teaser trailer, I feel like I was expecting to get a little bit more of a feel for the story. And what I really felt was just that they were just showing me the characters, which if that's the goal of the trailer, then okay, it's good. You know, I like the captain, but I don't know. I wasn't wild about the trailer. What I think is more interesting than the trailer is just the concept of the show. And that's what I'll ask you what you think about. It's something that, you know, Deep Space Nine was building up to this point where the Federation has become corrupt. The Federation is at a crossroads. Where is it going to go in the future? And I think Renegades is exploring that idea even more, where we have to go into the dark side of what's happening within the Federation, within Starfleet. They say in the official description of the show, the rules have changed and they realize they might be the last hope to save the Federation. And Walter Koenig has the line in here that our future may rely on outcasts and misfits, I believe is the line, or renegades, as the title says. I think it's an interesting concept. I'm not so sure that fans on a broad scale would be accepting of this take on Gene Roddenberry's universe. I don't know. How do you feel about it as a TNG fan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Roddenberry stickler by any definition. I really am not. I Deep Space Nine is my second favorite show. I love that show to death. But I don't know. And I don't want to speak ill of the project because it's interesting. And it did give me a reason to think about how things should be approached. But I think that it might be going a little too far. One step too far. Like, ultimately, Star Trek is optimistic science fiction, which we don't get a lot of, really. And I mean, even in Deep Space Nine, I think you can argue that while the characters may be a little bit more shades of gray, that the ultimate, that the message of the show is still trying to overcome limitations and trying to be better than what you are. So, but this just seems like it just seems a little too dark. And I don't mind darkness in science fiction, but it's just like it seems to be crossing some sort of probably in my mind arbitrary boundary. You know, I can't define it, but I can say that I think this is just a little too. I still want the whole world to be optimistic in some way, and this just seems to strip all of that out of it.
At least from what we know of it right now, because again, and it's probably the point that I'm getting to with the trailer. The trailer is only 58 seconds long, including title cards. So we don't really get a feel for where the story might be going. I think that for me, I'm fine with this view of the Star Trek universe in a single show and certainly in a fan project, because I think the Star Trek universe is big enough to allow for these different entry points of exploration into what's going on. And again, DS9 is my favorite series, and it is because of the fact that it takes a more realistic approach to the realities of life and what might actually be going on in a political organization like the Federation or Starfleet. But I do agree with you that for the general fan base, broad Star Trek fandom, I think this might be crossing, like you say, a line that a lot of fans aren't comfortable with, or it's just not what they're looking for in Star Trek. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it's received and what fans think about it. And, you know, of course, it has Walter Koenig in there. They've got Tim Russ in there, Gary Graham, Robert Picardo. So you've got all these big names in there. And, you know, hopefully this will lead a lot of fans to check it out, even though it's not going to be on network television, because they'll want to see their favorite actors in there and see what the story is like.
The one thing I took away from it was there's the moment in the trailer that they show a Cardassian, and I was like, and like the, because it's very modernly filmed, like I kind of, that like moment made me think of, wow, how would a new Star Trek look visually? And I was like, this right. It could be really interesting. Like we could make these aliens much more alien, and we could make it more exciting and do all of these different things. And like, you know, because what, you know, the last time we saw a Cardassian on screen was what, 12 years ago or something, maybe now, I don't know. Voyager would probably be the last time we saw it on screen, but even whatever, I mean, even
up close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like,
there's a Cardassian in Dead Stop on Enterprise, where they go in and they find that they're hooking Travis up to the computer. There's a Cardassian in those wrecks, but you only see him for just a second. Yeah.
But even like, even Enterprise, which ended 7 years ago or something. I don't remember off the top of my head, but
yeah.
Technology is advancing so fast. And it's just like, it was interesting to see these characters, even on a fan project, look better than they did in our most recent Star Treks. And I'm like, that's cool. That like, it makes me think, you know, with that kind of quick cam kind of, oh, there's a Cardassian running and punching. And I don't know, that got me really excited. And I was like, well, that would be cool to see a new Star Trek, a big budget TV Star Trek, and see how they would handle that.
It's interesting that you mentioned that Cardassian, because I actually rewatched the trailer quite a few times to see that scene, because that Cardassian looks so good that I was trying to figure out, did they do the makeup for this Cardassian and this is an actor in the show, or is that a clip from DS9? But I didn't recognize the clip, so the makeup job is really phenomenal.
Yeah.
From what the bit that we see in the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that's what stood out to me. It was like the fact that fans can now recreate these elaborate makeup jobs that they did in the late 90s. And so what does that mean for professional jobs now? Like, how much cooler are these aliens going to seem the next time Star Trek, hopefully soon, shows up on the small screen, you know?
Right. So we'll put a link in the show notes to the trailer if you want to go check it out. Post-production is already underway. They finished principal photography in October, and they're eyeing a summer or fall 2014 release. And so we'll just see how it goes along. If you're interested in donating or helping with the post-production costs, you can visit StarTrekRenegades.com and get involved in the project. And I am looking forward to seeing it, because like I said, although I may seem a little bit negative here in saying that, you know, I don't think that the broad fan base necessarily wants to see this take on Star Trek, for me personally, it's interesting. And, you know, I've often wondered what a Section 31 Star Trek series might be like on network television. And here you'll get to see a darker side of the Federation with familiar faces. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. All right, well, let's move on to the next thing here, Daniel. And this is about Geek Nation tours. This is something that longtime listeners of the Ready Room will be familiar with. This is our friend Larry Nemechek and our friend Terrace from Geek Nation Tours, who take everyone from Los Angeles area over to the Vegas convention, stopping along the way to check out many of the great locales that have been used in Star Trek over the years for shooting. And the best way to describe what this is like for everyone is to hear it from Larry and Terrace themselves. And I did have an opportunity to sit down with them and talk about it. So here is that discussion. Larry and Terrace, welcome back to the Ready Room. It's been quite a while since you guys were on to talk about Geek Nation tours, but the time of year has rolled around again to start getting ready for another outing. And Larry, first, I have to ask you, did you dress up as a Gorn and attack attendees on the last tours I had suggested to you?
No, because we heard from the Gorn community that they didn't like other people being cast as Gorn who weren't actually Gorn.
Right.
So we got into trouble with SAG there a little bit, even though it was an event.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to bring any lawsuits on Terrace. So no, we forgave that. Or have, you know, Bobby Clark sue us for loss of income either, even though he predates to a time before hiring actual Gorn was the accepted practice in Hollywood. So there
although we did force Larry to wear the Gorn skirt outfit.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
But all photos have been burned or demagnetized or whatever.
Well, Terrace, it's time once again, it's hard to believe the months are flying by because it feels like Star Trek Las Vegas just happened, and it's actually been, I guess, almost 4 months now. But it's time to start thinking about the tour again. So what do you have on slate for this coming year?
Yeah, we've got, I've got plenty of tours this year. I've got lots. If you guys are interested in any of those, come by. But the Star Trek one, we're really starting to push this year because we're only doing it, we've decided, Larry and I decided that we're only going to do it once every 2 years. And so this is going to be our on year, and then next year there's not going to be a tour. So we're excited about that. That kind of makes it a little bit more interesting for everybody. Make sure that everybody has time to save up for the next time. So we're really pumped about going to L.A. and Vegas, and of course all the other sites that we're headed out to see.
Yeah, well, and this time we've tweaked it. I mean, anybody that was on the first tour loved it and raved, but we made a couple of tweaks on this pre-Vegas version. For one thing, Terrace always has a welcome dinner when any of his tours – and you should say, Terrace, that your tour, you do tours to, like, gaming conventions and other conventions, but you do military and medieval castle tours and, you know, a lot of – and you've got some newer things in the works even. But for our Star Trek tour – this time for the welcome dinner, we're going to go to Cirroc Lofton's restaurant. So, it's not Cajun in New Orleans, but it's the next best thing.
I have a question for you now, Larry.
Uh-oh.
Are you going to take people out back to the alley where they can watch Avery Brooks peel potatoes?
Yes, we're hoping to get that. Or if not, the real thing will have a hologram of he'll look like he's beaming in and beaming out while he peels potatoes. I've forgotten that. Yeah. But since this is part of your authentic New Orleans decor brought here to L.A., so just south of LAX. That's funny. We should tell Cirroc he needs a big blown-up poster of him over in the
Get one playing him playing the piano.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah. And then when you walk out that door and you see him there, then you look across the alley and you see two Federation security guys with phaser rifles walking.
Very authentic.
The only two extras in the whole look, it's martial law on Earth. It's two yellow coats with two phaser rifles.
And then in the middle of dinner, Nicole DeBoer shows up at the door.
You know what? We could work on that one. Forget the tour. I think I'll just work on that for tomorrow night. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, well, Cirroc Lofton's restaurant, that's not the only place that you're going to be visiting, right? So what do you have on the slate beyond that?
You talk about the other new thing this year is we thought it wasn't practical the first time, but this time we're going to basically come to Las Vegas a day early, quote unquote, and on Wednesday go past Vegas a few miles out to the Valley of Fire where Kirk died. We have his promise, work permitting, but if Face Off isn't filming, Mike Westmore will come out to the site. They had a very small crew when they filmed those scenes, and he was out there when Picard made his pile of rocks for the grave and all of that. So that's a bonus. But we're going to go out to Valley of Fire, which is a very cool place. It'll be very hot, but we're going to go out there. And they have the bridge. They kept the bridge from the shoot, and they use it in the park. Isn't that right, Terrence?
Interesting.
Yeah, for sure. But we better watch the word bridge. It might confuse people. Yes, where Kirk, meets.
Not the bridge, the crossing bridge.
That's right, where you walk across, not where you command from. that was that's still out there. They use it as part of their regular tourists stop. I don't think many people know that it's actually that bridge. But we're going to go out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're really excited about heading out there. And it's all also has to do coincide with the anniversary of Generations. Isn't that right, Larry?
And next year will be the 30th, 20th. The 20th anniversary of Generations.
That's right.
We don't need to pile on any more years than we need to. But yeah, it'll be the 20th anniversary of Generations next year too. So a nice little double whammy there.
Yeah, and we're really excited about going there. And of course, the Vegas convention is always awesome. And on the tours, you always you know, meet new friends as we go through site from site to site, and continue across from LA to Vegas, of course, and beyond, as Larry just said. But you get to meet new people with like loves, and it's a thing of beauty to watch. And what's great about that is that you have somebody to hang out with for the convention itself, which is a whole lot of fun. It's actually my favorite convention. I decided that last year when I was there that I go to a lot of conventions, a lot of geek conventions throughout the year, and I always am sad when I leave that place, and it's such a great time. So please join us. You're going to have a blast, yeah, if you've never been before.
I mean, you have a pretty good international following, Terrace. I mean, Chris, that's – well, Terrace, you have one too. You're based in Canada, and you have clientele from the Pacific Rim across to Europe. And
right. And
it's a good – if somebody's out there nervy about going to Vegas, or and they've not even traveled at all, much less maybe traveled to the States, it's a good way to come in and have some – you know, bond with some people for a week so that you walk in the door of the Rio with you're not a total stranger. Although you go to a convention, you stand in one line for 15, 20 minutes, you instantly have 19 new friends. So, you know, and by the end of the weekend, you've got 47 new instant friends. But but the tour is a great way to come in and make some instant memories and have some traveling buddies if you didn't come with any. And if you did have some, or you have a spouse or significant other that's not a big fan, I know, Terrace, you take care of that too, so.
That's right. We take care of the non-geek spouse, as we say, whatever that is, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your wife, or your husband. We take care of all that, make sure that they've got things to do while you're geeking out. And, of course, we go to our normal places in L.A., where I guess maybe we should quickly cover those. We, of course, go to the Griffith Observatory, and we go to both Starfleet Academies, both JJ's and
the real one?
The real one.
Excuse me, okay, the prime one. We're
right into the politics of the Star Trek films already, and that's perfect. But, yeah, we get to see that one and various other really cool places. And then one of my favorite parts, and to put a feather in Larry's cap, is when we go to the Paramount Studios, and he's telling us, you know, the stairway was used in this particular film, and to stand right here and you'll see the scene, and everything really came alive, and Larry's a great guide that way, and it was really, again, a thing of beauty when people kind of had their faces light up and say, wow, I'm right here, and it's a really, really great time that way.
That is kind of a thing that I didn't even factor in. I mean, to me, I'm used to having this idea and having people go, well, I could go to Vasquez Rocks myself, and it's like, well, yes, but like we did have Bobby Clark lead around and talk about the 2 days they filmed out there for Arena in 1966, and you're kind of like, oh my God, and he's recounting it, you know, off the top of his head. You can see Bobby at a convention, you can go to Vasquez yourself, but having it together is special. But the whole tour, to be with a crowd and not just you and your one buddy, but to be with a group of people going through all this and experiencing things. You know, and the other cool thing is most of the touring sites are the ones that we picked. There's a ton we could have done, but to make a tour that's functional as a tour, everything we have is not only a track site, but most of them are pretty cool LA tourist attractions you'd be happy to show pictures to your mundane friends to, you know. So the Santa Monica Pier and Will Rogers Park, and
you go to the same hot dog stand where Tuvok and Paris get hot dogs.
That red and white hot dog stand is the same. It's still standing there intact, out the pier. So, which is kind of scary. You go, oh, my God, this is it.
Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite times. It was very strange when we came across that hot dog stand, because somehow that really struck a chord for me during the episode, which seems awfully strange. But then when I was there, I'm like, wow, this is incredible. I'm exactly where they were. And I had that experience just like this weekend. I watched Transformers, and I was looking at the Griffith Observatory, and I'm like, hey, I was there. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if people want to find out more about the tour and the overall itinerary and, of course, sign on for the tour itself, where should they go? And how many seats do you have? Because I know it's limited on the bus.
Yeah, well, we limit it to 35. We're just opening the tour now, so hop on board, grab a spot. And, yeah, you just go to www.geeknationtours.com. And if you have any questions, you can email me, headgeek@geeknationtours.com.
Yep. And I should say, too, that he's got a boutique company. And it's not about fill out the website and, hey, we'll see you in 9 months. He's pretty hands-on with helping everybody customize whatever you want to do. Some people, the first time around, said, oh, I wish I'd known this. I've already got my airfare to Vegas set up. And, you know, Terrace would have helped you minimize any, you know, changing into coming into L.A. first and leaving. I mean, you know, so give Terrace a call after you fill out the form. He'll want to do everything voice-to-voice anyway, assuming he's not in a tunnel coming out of the igloo like it sounds like tonight. And, but I mean, that's one thing I always tell people it's a big boon. And that's why I enjoy working with Terrace on this, because he came to me about doing this and I had to check him out too a little bit. So, he mostly passed muster. So yeah.
Yep, for sure. And we really work hard with you, to customize. So by all means, we'll be happy to have you on board and happy to take care of you all the way through.
It's a cool experience for everybody. And for me too. I love staying fresh like that and seeing everybody enjoy themselves.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. Maybe one of these days I'll make it over to the States to join you guys as well. I hope so.
Yeah, and I'll have something up on treklandblog.com and all my stuff too. So it's Christmas season, and I should say happy Stellar Cartography release day early, Chris, since it's out in a couple of days. And
no, Larry,
oh, that's right.
I got a notice from Amazon.com today. They mailed it.
Yep. Well, I've had some people, I've been watching online people, it's been popping up. People are, one guy said, this is too awesome. I have to get more walls. So.
Congratulations on that, Larry, by the way. That's very cool.
That's very cool, too. So there's the hot thing coming out of Trekland this right now, Chris. But anyway, thanks for having us on for the tour. We need to start talking about the tour. It's tour time.
That's right.
Absolutely. All right. Well, stay warm over there, Terrace, in Canada and inside your igloo.
I will. It's like minus 20. I think that's minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a little chilly today.
Chilly today, eh? Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we'll talk soon, guys.
Thank you. We'll see you. Have a great night.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys. All right, Daniel. Well, it was good of Larry and Terrace to drop by and actually let us know what's happening on the tour right from the Gorn's mouth, shall we say. So let's move on and tell everyone about one of our sponsors for this week's show, and this is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. They have classics, they have current bestsellers, some of the most famous Star Trek books around are there as well, read by some of your favorite actors, especially John DeLancey. And in fact, I believe John DeLancey is narrating the book that you've chosen for this week's show.
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't listened or read any TNG books, but I was talking to my co-hosts, and Darren Moser suggested Dark Mirror. And so I went over to the website and checked out the sample read by John DeLancey. And because it sounded interesting to me, right? We don't in TNG, we don't get a mirror universe episode. It's sorely lacking in that series. So and I listened to the sample. I was blown away. I thought it was so cool how John DeLancey, how they played with the audio settings and like his voice and like different. He plays the different characters really well. And well, of course, John DeLancey, I mean, he could to me anyways, he could talk to me for the rest of my life and I would be smiling. So. But it was really, really cool. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is a really good book. This is actually the book that I was choosing for this week as well. So it's funny that the crew of Earl Grey and I independently both said Diane Duane's Dark Mirror is the book to recommend from Audible this week. I used to have this book on cassette tape when it first came out. And I actually can remember very fondly driving down the highway with my wife. Of course, we were just dating way, way back then. And we had gone to Indiana University for summer programs. And this is one of the books that we had on audio tape in the car for that drive from Alabama up to Indiana. And this, of course, is, and this might be why your co-host recommended this book, there's cetacean ops in this book.
So clearly Diane knows her Trek. She knows who's really behind the scenes and what's really going on. So of course this would be the perfect book.
Absolutely. So cetacean ops is here. So all those wondering, you know, where is all this Commander Flipper stuff coming from on Trek FM? Well, besides the mention of cetacean ops over the PA system in yesterday's Enterprise, comes from Diane's book here, Dark Mirror. And also, you know, you mentioned you guys don't get a TNG Mirror episode. I wish there were one because, you know, in the Mirror universe, I'm pretty sure that Robin Loeffler is a dominatrix. Loeffler's laws. I mean, because she's so sweet in our real universe. So, you know, she's going to be like Kira and the... Not that Kira is so sweet in our universe, but she's going to be like Kira and the Intendant on DS9. I'm pretty sure. Black leather on Robin Loeffler.
So alternate or Mirror Loeffler's law number 7 would be everybody wears black chaps.
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. So Dark Mirror, it is a really great story where the TNG crew does get to encounter their mirror counterparts on the ISS 1701D. And they actually have to go into combat. That's kind of the cool thing. If you picture, do you remember the, like, one of the original concepts for Generations was the idea of, like, the Enterprise is having to battle each other. It's Kirk versus Picard. And that's what happens here, except it's Picard versus Picard. Because it's the USS 1701D and the ISS 1701D coming into contact with one another. So really, really great book. And you can get this book for free. Mirror, Robin Loeffler not included. Aww. When you try Audible as a Trek FM listener, because you can get a free audiobook of your choice just by trying Audible. So go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. It helps us bring the Ready Room to you every week, and you're going to get this wonderful audiobook narrated by John Delancey. Again, that's over at audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for their support of the Ready Room and the network. Well, Daniel, last week it was great to be joined here on the Ready Room by Five Year Mission for a preview of your three. They played 4 tracks for us, acoustic, which was really fantastic. One of the tracks, anyway, we had previewed here on the show before. Now, some of the tracks we had not previewed for everyone yet, and we got those acoustic, so we're not going to do those again here on the show, but we did want to share with you the rest of the album over the coming weeks and share a couple of tracks that did not get played but did get discussed during our feature on last week's show. And today we're going to look at 2 tracks, Journey to Babel and Friday's Child. Now, Daniel, one thing I love about the platform that we have here on Trek FM with the Ready Room is that we're able to introduce people to Five Year Mission who aren't familiar with the band, because I just love the guys. I love the band. I have ever since Year 1 came out. Were you familiar with Five Year Mission before you got involved with Trek FM and you started hearing us all talk about it and have them on the show?
No, honestly, I mean, I may have heard of them in passing, but never really listened. And actually, up until this week, didn't really ever listened to any of their songs. But it's really good stuff. I was honestly, I'll be honest with all of our listeners, I'm kind of blown away. Like, I think that the music is really good stuff. It's not just that it's good Trek music, but it's just good music. And I was highly entertained.
Exactly. So let's play everyone a clip of one more track from the album that we haven't previewed yet, and that's Journey to Babel. So Daniel, what did you think about Journey to Babel here?
I really, this out of the 2 tracks that were previewed today, this one's my favorite. probably because I'm biased and I really like that episode. It's probably like one of my favorite episodes of the original series. I love Spock and Sarek, but it's good. It's good. It's upbeat and fun, and I really enjoyed listening to it for sure.
Yeah, it was. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around whether I feel the episode in it or not. It's a really fun song, and I'm focusing on, you know, that struggle, if you can convince me, and Spock has that great moment with Sarek and whether he's going to actually help save his father's life or not. But one of the fun things is seeing in all the songs, and this is something we discussed on the feature last week, is seeing how each individual person approaches an episode and what they see in it, and especially when you're going to try to set that to music. How do you pull that out?
Yeah, and that's got to be tough.
Yeah, Journey to Babel is one of those episodes where there's a variety of different angles that you could take on it. Like if I were writing the song, I would probably focus on the Andorian fight scene in the corridor.
Bridge, Spock.
Spock here.
I'm on deck 5, near my quarters. I've been attacked by an Andorian.
Fair enough. I mean, that makes sense. It is such a huge component of that story. And as all of our listeners know, that it's obviously a big through line in all of Trek FM. So yeah, I understand.
It really is. All right. Well, let's play a clip of the other Trek today. And that is Friday's Child. All right, now this one's interesting to me, Daniel, because Friday's Child, for me anyway, and let me ask for you, is it kind of a forgotten episode? Is it one of those episodes of Star Trek that you almost forgets there until you come back across it when you're doing a rewatch?
If I had to be completely honest with you, Chris, yes. I mean, if you're going to ask me right now what Friday's Child is about, I would say it's a TOS episode. If you had asked me about a half an hour ago, what's Friday's Child about? I wouldn't know. I don't even remember. I honestly, it's one of those episodes. Yeah, it doesn't stand out anyway.
It's one of those episodes that I kind of tend to forget about. And even when I talk about Klingons in the original series, you know, I know that there are Klingons in Friday's Child, but I tend to focus on Erin of Mercy, Day of the Dove, The Trouble with Tribbles as being those really big Klingon moments. And kind of forget that there is more Klingon involvement in this episode than I tend to remember. But the other thing in this episode is this kind of internal struggle within the Capellan society. And that's what I think they're able to pull out here with Friday's Child, is the focus on that aspect, the sacrifice in the episode, the personal dynamics, not involving the Klingons as much, but just what's going on with the characters there on the planet itself. And it has that movement towards the future, because that's ultimately what it is the baby is one day going to rule.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, about these guys that's where the talent comes in. It's like, it might be easy for people to come up with maybe concepts at least of songs like For City on the Edge of Forever or Balance of Terror, but that they can pull out artistically, that they can pull out themes and interesting subject matter out of maybe forgettable episodes such as Friday's Child. That's what really is impressive to me, because I couldn't do it. I don't have the artistic ability.
Yeah. It is a really true talent. So you can check out the album. It's by the time this show drops, the album will be out, because the official launch date is December 1st. So now you can get your hands on the album if you like. Go over to the band's website, 5yearmission.net, and there should be links over there, I think, to all the different ways. But it's going to be on iTunes and Amazon, probably on Spotify. I don't know if it's up there yet. I think year one and year two are on Spotify anyway. Of course, you can get the physical album from the band as well. I think they have autographed copies as well as an option. So anyway, go over to the website, check it out, support the band, and I get some great tunes. All right. So, Daniel, I'm glad you're with me on the show today for this one. Questions from the Fleet. This is from listener Jamie Somerville over in the UK. And Jamie wants to know what we think is the best ship design. He says, my question is about ship design. People sometimes forget one of the main stars of a Star Trek show is the ship or station. I am curious, which Starfleet ship do you consider to have the best design? For me, it has to be the Enterprise E. It's such a seamless design, like it's molded from one piece of tritanium. Thanks for answering my question. Love the show. Are you going to say what I think you're going to say, Daniel?
I'm really excited that you brought me on for this question, Chris. the E, yeah, I agree with him that the E is, it's like the MacBook, right? Of yeah. Starship design.
You could see like Space Johnny Ive there with a white background explaining how they molded the Enterprise E and how the contour. I can see that. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, you can't replace the deflector dish, but you never should have to. So I guess that's the point.
The deflector dish, it has a 10-hour charge. And then you can just recharge it, and it never has to be replaced.
Yeah. So hopefully you don't get the faulty model. But I do. I love the E. I think probably overall, I agree with him that it is probably the best of all of the ships that we get to see all the time. But I do have to say, and this may be unpopular, that I am also in love with the J.J. Abrams Enterprise. As has been mentioned here before,
really?
the exterior of it, I think, is
yeah
it's I think it's well I've said this before so it's not controversial it's better than the original and then the A, which a lot of people will disagree with me on, but
yeah, a lot of people as in everyone, as in, Daniel,
but that's okay because yeah. I mean, everybody will learn and it's fine, but it's just those nacelles nacelles are just perfectly crafted and they have the bulge in the okay it doesn't matter but that's
yeah
just my
everyone. If you want to really know what Daniel thinks about this, go listen to the Ready Room 100 when we had the big panel with 11 people on. The great nacelle debate is in that show. I'm pretty sure that the JJ Enterprise nacelles was one of the 100 things that Daniel loves about Star Trek. It came up.
It's actually number 1 through 50 is the nacelles. Yeah. So.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with you on the Enterprise E. It's a really, really sharp-looking ship. And in terms of the overall ship design, yeah, I might say it's the best ship design. It's hard for me to actually say that one ship is the best over the other. Now, I will say my favorite of all the Enterprises is the 1701 movie refit Enterprise. So the refit and the A, which, you know, look essentially the same on the outside. That's just my favorite Enterprise. And a lot of it is nostalgia. You know, I grew up with TOS, but the, you know, for me, high school and university was the TOS movie era. And so those ships are, it's just the best Enterprise for me. 1701D, I've never been wild about. It looks fantastic from certain angles. It looks extraordinarily clunky from other angles. I know it was really difficult to shoot. And I just think it has an enormous design flaw from a Starfleet perspective, which we see come to fruition in Deep Space Nine when the Odyssey, the Galaxy-class ship, is destroyed when a Jem'Hadar fighter does a kamikaze run on the neck piece. And I think that's why the E looks the way it does. It's like addressing that flaw. It's like, okay, we're gonna build a warship here. We're not gonna make it an easy target for enemy attacks.
Yeah, but to be fair, that's a legacy flaw. That's a flaw with all of the previous designs as well of the Enterprise, don't you think? Like the thin neck. I mean, yeah. You know, it was worse on the original and the A. Not so much in the B, I don't think. Actually, they probably went back to a thinner neck.
The Excelsior class started to address that. Yeah. You know, it's worse and it's not worse. It depends on who you're fighting with the earlier ones, because the neck piece is thinner. Easier to saw the saucer section off the ship, but also you have to have better aim. You know, the D made it a lot easier for, like, pack lids to hit it even. So,
well, I don't think we have to worry too much about the pack lids, but I understand what you're saying.
The other ship I'll bring up is the Defiant, because what I like about the Defiant is I like the bridge design of the Defiant, because it puts the captain in a position where he can easily communicate with the crew. The bridge of the Defiant really feels very, very functional. I think the NX-01 bridge also has that feeling to it a bit. I think they got back to that a little bit with the 1701E bridge, whereas the bridge on the D in particular really felt just too spread out, not functional as a command center.
Yeah. I mean, even though, you know, as an Earl Grey guy, you know, I do love the D, but I do agree that the bridge design of the D, while it is super iconic and super great, it's probably the least functional that we see. Yeah, you're right. It's like, it's oblongated. And so, and it's like, you're like 15 feet away from the people in the back and like seven feet away from the people. Yeah, you're right. It's a little strange, but.
Yeah. So I think ultimately every ship has its strong points. Every ship has some weak points as well. Hard to put my finger on one as the best, but I think that Jamie here has a really good pick in the E. I'll always love the movie Refit Enterprise, but I'm curious to know what other listeners think, you know, which ship is their favorite. So you can let us know over in the forums, trek.film/forums. You can let us know what you think about that, or, you know, send us messages as well. Hit us up on Twitter on that as well. And if you have questions about Star Trek that you would like for us to answer here on the Ready Room and discuss, you can send those questions from the fleet. Go over to trek.film/contact and use the form there. There's an option for questions from the fleet on that form. Send us any question you have about Star Trek, and we'll talk about it right here on the Ready Room. And Jamie, we really thank you for sending your question in this week as well, and of course for listening to the show every week. All right, Daniel, that's all we have in news today. But before we're joined by your Earl Grey cohorts to talk about the game, or you guys can talk about the game. I'm just going to talk about Leffler. Let's tell everyone about our sponsor for this week's show, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS. It makes it simple for you to create your own blog, website, portfolio, or online store, or as we've done here at Trek FM, podcast network, because Trek FM is built on Squarespace. And the thing about it is it's just incredibly easy to use. You don't need to know anything about HTML coding or web design to have a beautiful website using Squarespace. But if you are a web developer and you want access to every line of code, complete control over your site, you can do that as well with Squarespace, because they have a developer's platform. So either way, you're going to be able to create the best, most stable, robust website that you can online. And if you ever need help, they have an amazing support team that's available 24/7. They get back to you just in a matter of minutes, stay with you all the way through, and you can get it all for an amazing price of just $8 per month. You can get unlimited everything for $16 per month, and you can get commerce for $24. But the pricing isn't even the main point for me with Squarespace, because I would pay a whole lot more money for three main things about Squarespace that I love. And the first one is the design focus. And Daniel, I know you appreciate beautiful looking websites as well.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, it's funny because I was just on, the Internet Archive not too long ago, about a week or two ago, and it's really amazing how the difference between older websites and the newer, sleeker websites. Yeah. And clearly that the more we move forward into the future, the better things are getting, the more you're able to communicate with people with sleeker and cleaner designs. And that's what it's about. That's what's important. You know, you're putting up a website to give information to people, and you're not going to do it very well if everything's all smashed up together or cluttered.
Exactly. And a lot of those features that you see on the latest websites, not just features like you think of traditional, like, you know, big software features, for example, but just like the way that the website reacts to the way someone is using it, the way they're accessing the information, the way that the information from your website is getting out there to social media. These things can be very complex to create if you tried to do it yourself. Even if you use a platform like WordPress where you have to put a lot of add-ons to get those features, that can be difficult to maintain as well. And the thing about Squarespace is it's all built right into the platform. And so you don't have to do anything, but people will look at your website and they'll be amazed and they'll think, wow, you're a really, really amazing web developer. And even if you don't know how to do that yourself, Squarespace has done it all for you. Besides the design, there's connected accounts, which allow you to have your Squarespace site tweet your content out automatically when you publish it. You can share a page from your website on Facebook automatically as well. You can also connect to Pinterest, Instagram, Google+, many more web and social services. And there's responsive design that makes sure that your website looks beautiful on any screen size, any device, any orientation automatically. So you can design a site that looks great in the web browser. Maybe that's where most of your visitors are going to view it. But you know, lots of people are going to be looking at it on the train, on their smartphone, or in the park, on their tablet. They're going to be flipping those devices upright on their sides. You never know what they're going to do. Responsive design with Squarespace automatically reflows your site so that it looks fantastic no matter what. And then there's the commerce feature. You know, if you have items that you want to sell online, whether they're crafts, whether you compose music and you want to sell your tracks, whether you do t-shirt designs, whatever you want to sell, physical or digital products, you can do it very easily with Squarespace. They have integrated Stripe into the platform. So as a Squarespace customer, you get a 30-second merchant sign-up, instant approval, no paperwork to do, and you can begin receiving money for purchases immediately. And full tax and shipping rules are handled by region. You can also print shipping labels. You can manage your orders. You can send customer update emails all through the interface. And if you have inventory on Shopify or BigCartel, you can move that over in a few clicks as well. Commerce is currently available in the US, UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain. And that list of countries is growing all the time. Daniel, the best way to find out how great Squarespace is, of course, is to just try it for yourself. And you can do that absolutely free for 14 days and have access to all the features of Squarespace during that time. There's no credit card required. Just go over to squarespace.com, put in your email address and a name, and in a matter of moments, you'll be creating a great online presence using all the exceptional tools of Squarespace. And best of all, as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your purchase by using offer code TREK12. So just go to squarespace.com, get that free trial. Again, plans start at $8 per month, $16 for unlimited. Commerce is $24, and be sure to choose the annual plan and get a free custom domain registration as well. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of The Ready Room and Trek FM. When it was announced that TNG would be remastered on Blu-ray, it was only a matter of time before Season 5 was released, and I would be watching Ensign Leffler in HD. I mean the game. I would be watching the game, and that's the episode we're going to talk about today. And to help us do that, we have that full-scale invasion of the Ready Room by Earl Grey that we've been waiting for. And I'm just going to draw the line right here, guys. It's this far, no farther. Stay where you are, but welcome to the Ready Room.
Live long and prosper. Well,
thanks for having us. Isn't Ensign Leffler the most dangerous game, though?
And games need rules.
I don't know. Yeah.
And there are many of them.
Right. There are many, many rules in the game of Leffler.
I think Leffler would get along with Quark because they would just spout out laws and rules back at each other, you know, back and forth. And like, you know, it would be interesting, I think.
They don't call them Leffler suggestions.
Suggestion number three. Don't wear pants to 10 forward.
I did not see that suggestion.
What I mean, wear a dress, Darren. I mean, I don't mean go pantsless.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm just going to say, Guinan's always behind that bar.
Don't wear your uniform.
Or scant. Darren likes the scant.
Guinan never wears pants, yeah, in 10 forward. So, I mean, really, we can't. Maybe it's just a no pants policy, really.
I was going to say no pants, no service, but if you wear pants, then you don't get the service. So I don't know. This is really confusing. So joining us today, yes, from our TNG show, Earl Grey, we do have Philip, Daniel, and Darren. So guys, why don't you all just give a universal hello, as the listeners already know you.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, we're not quite like to the journey. We don't have like a...
Yeah. We just sipped our drink.
The sad part is that Darren actually counted that down, and you still weren't together. So
I was sipping. That's what we do in Earl Grey. I was bringing up my mug and taking a sip.
All right. Okay, so we're going to talk about the game today. We wanted to pick something from Season 5, since the Season 5 Blu-rays just dropped. And, of course, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting to see Leffler in HD, you know, just to see... You know, how she looks in her dress and all. And actually, you know, something that I found watching in HD that I noticed more than I've ever noticed before is that when Leffler is sitting there doing analysis of data with the computer, when they're trying to figure out how the game affects the brain, the way that Ashley Judd does her face, she reminds me so much of Jadzia when Jadzia is doing data analysis on Deep Space Nine.
That's true. She does have that strong female aspect.
She made me realize, man, she certainly knows a lot of biology for an engineer.
Right? Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that you brought this up, because this is such an infuriating part of this episode that she as an engineer and Wesley as a cadet student are apparently well-versed in every aspect of anything so that they can then determine. They're like talking about neurobiology and... Wesley's like, oh, it's a psychotropic
a
drug.
Core, a human eye. It's like, you know, tomato, tomato. Really.
Well, I have a theory. If you look at the fact that Leffler is probably pretty close to being in a similar age bracket of someone from the academy. So she, just like Wesley, learned all of these things in the academy, and she just hasn't had time to have them slowly drip out of her brain as she doesn't use them, like all education.
That's... One thing that we have here on television in Japan that's quite popular are game shows where one of the things you have to do is very complex kanji, you know, Chinese characters. And the younger people tend to do better at it because they've just studied all this stuff in school and they haven't, as you say, had time to forget all the stroke orders yet, which happens to the 40 or 50-year-old contestants on the show.
My cursive is terrible.
I have another theory, though, Darren, and that is that we already know, as I've explained before, the reason in the early seasons of TNG that Wesley wears the Technicolor sweater is that he's an expert in all divisions, command, science, and engineering. He knows everything, and he holds hands with Leffler in this episode, thereby transferring his knowledge to her, and that's why they're able... to figure it all out together when they get to the lab.
But he's very unsure of himself. Like that whole scene.
It's
like,
an act. He's just trying to, you know, get her to like him. So
All right.
Isn't that the nerdiest date, though? It's like we're sitting in 10 forward having a nice dinner. You know what we should be doing? Analyzing a biochemical device. That's awesome. Let's go. Man, it's like making out in a drive-thru. I mean, really.
That's what I was thinking when I'm watching that scene. Exactly. All right. Well, let's jump into some specific topics here. The first one is Riker's romper room. This is, maybe I should say romping room. The fact that once again, Riker is chasing skirts and gets the ship in big trouble. You noticed this, right, Philip?
For those of you keeping count, we have a matter of perspective, and where he is accused of murder and almost gets sent down to the planet and tried for murder. And we also have the outcast, where he disrupts an entire society because he dates a genderless person, which I think Riker, I mean, you know, one gender can't contain him. He has to go outside all the bounds. So, yes, once again, here we are in the game, which I don't know about y'all. It was an uncomfortable opening scene for me. I'm like, oh, chase. And then they're like, I don't know. I don't want to see what electronic things he brings into his bed. I mean, I'm like, can I turn it off for a second? Because I don't know if I'm really
the opening scene feels awfully rapey, doesn't it? Like,
it's one of those scenes where if you were introducing your parents to Star Trek, you'd almost, you know, wait, what's going to happen? Maybe let's watch something else, Mom and Dad. I'm not quite sure where this is going. No. It's not all like this. Well, his character is, but it's not all like this. It's really good.
And the thing is, like I mentioned in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
If Riker goes on an away mission and then comes back and says, hey, do you want to see what I brought back from Risa? That's not something that would be in any way enticing. I would think.
It's like, usually he's saying that to his physician is usually what he's saying that to is what you're saying.
Right. He tells Beverly, I brought something back from Risa that I really want to show you. She says, well, that's what I'm here for. I am the chief medical officer.
Well, it reminds me of Captain's Holiday where, you know, Riker is sitting there with Picard and Troy, and it's like, you know, wow, I've really had a lot of good times there in Risa. And Troy's like, yes, we've heard about them a lot.
I'm sure he posts them on his space blog, and you know, everyone in the Federation knows about number one.
Well, haven't you read Commander Riker's Squarespace page all about Risa? He actually helps promote Risa, and it's you should check it out. It's really good. It tells you where all the good places to go, all the things you should pick up as gifts. You know, it's great.
It even has an e-commerce feature where you can buy Horgons to display so that you can then experience Jamaharan.
And the sole commentator is Worf saying, bad weather.
No, Worf has his website where he sells all the cakes that he baked himself.
Wesley, come eat this cake. I baked it myself.
That was the weirdest scene, and this is a strange episode, but that was the weirdest scene. Like, you can tell that Worf cannot contain his excitement about this. Like his mom's like, oh, hey, Wesley, and Captain Picard is like, you know, oh, welcome. Let's speak Latin to each other. And then all of a sudden, just Worf just bursts out like, I made cake. Eat it. Is it good? Like, it's so weird.
It's weirder than Data's like, laughter program 7 complete.
Well, I'm surprised this one didn't have mint frosting. And that's usually Worf's cake.
That's yes, right. He likes his cellular peptide cake with mint frosting.
So this, I was talking earlier about watching this in HD, being able to see Ashley Judd's face and noticing more how she's like Jadzia and Terry Farrell when she's doing that data analysis. I also noticed here in the scene on Risa with Riker that when he gets pinned out on the bed and they do the close-ups of Riker's face, Frakes looks like he's really, really enjoying the scene.
Now, yes. Have we established...
He does.
Is this the same alien that shows up later with, like, her hair all pulled back? Or is it alien of the same species? Because, yeah, she...
Whoa, Darren, are you saying they all look alike?
Oh,
all right, boy. Racist Wesley.
I mean, one had her hair forward and one had her hair back, so obviously they're different people. I'm sorry, I should have known.
Gosh, boy, I tell you what, you are never, ever going to get off Mordock's blacklist. Darren.
You mean Mendoc.
You think we all look alike, don't you?
No, it's Mendon. No, it's Blue List. So now the full phrase is, don't be a racist Wesley or you'll end up on Mordon's Blue List.
Don't be a Wesley, racist Wesley.
I need some chocolate.
Yeah.
So the plans are that the Katarians are going to take over the Federation by using this game. And you have to admit that Riker, using a woman to give this device to Riker on Rizos, just the absolute foolproof plan. It's like, I could see like Doofenshmirtz addressing the Katarian Council. Like, this is my evil plan. I'm going to take over the, well, he don't even put the tri-state area. They're going for the whole Federation. But it worked beautifully.
No, it did.
Yeah, I mean, Riker's libido is basically Geordi's visor. You can use that thing to take advantage of any evil plan, basically.
The other thing I noticed in this episode is that when they get back up on the ship and they're on the bridge and they start giving the rundown of everything that's happening. They've got like 5 science teams running on. They think that they've got 5 weeks to explore this area, but they've only got 2. Then the ship is bringing Wesley. And then, oh, Starfleet just added a diplomatic mission to Oceanus 4. Well, of course they did, because the Enterprise D basically runs diplomatic missions for the Federation all the time. But they said Oceanus 4, and the first thing I thought was Ambassador Flipper.
That's true. He finally gets some action.
And it's no relation actually to Commander Flipper. It's not kind of this, you know, I know the names sound familiar, but it's a different kind of.
It's not the same family. They're not related.
Wait, so you're assuming that just because it's a water planet that, Commander Flipper is going to be sent on this mission?
That's right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, it could be Livingston's time to be on the away team.
No.
Livingston.
Livingston doesn't go on away missions. He's like Picard. He's much too important. He has to stay in the ready room to observe any important meetings that happen. So no. He would never put himself in danger.
Are you telling me that there was a deleted scene from Encounter at Farpoint where Commander Flipper is like, Livingston, you're never going on away mission. Livingston's like, Commander Flipper, are you going to stand by that? And so that's throughout the entire series we have.
There's also that cut scene where Livingston says, please stop me from making an ass of myself in front of guppies.
Guppies.
Well, you guys didn't know this. There's actually a secret pocketbook series written about Livingston while he's away. His away mission basically takes place during Jellicoe's reign, and he just goes off on many adventures outside the tank in his own special shuttlecraft.
That's right. Because Jellicoe said, get that fish out of there. And so yeah.
And that's
was
what
his
makes
cover.
Him the worst.
That entire episode was his cover to go on a mission.
Put Livingston in a uniform, finally.
That would be hilarious. Oh, man.
All right. So, well, one of the things that's going on here is that Wesley Crusher's coming back to the ship. So, what is this for you guys? Is this a Wesley episode? For me, this is a Leffler episode. Is this a Wesley episode for you guys?
Well, I thought watching this, and again, this is a season 5 episode, and I'm doing my rewatch. So I'm in season 3, so I'm kind of used to Wesley. But seeing in season 5, where like the crew's like, "Yes, Wesley's back," I'm like, "I mean, really? Are we that happy to see him?" I mean, like, I'm not a Wesley hater by any means, but I'm like, I don't know if I'd be that excited to see him again. You know, I mean, I get that the crew. Like the real people, like the filming crew and the actors are happy to see Will Wheaton. But like, was the writer like, which I think was Braga on this one, but was the writer like, you know what the audience wants? Another Wesley episode. I'm like, I don't know if anyone was clamoring for that by season 5.
And we're going to pair him up with the female version of Wesley, who's already on the ship, and then just have her meet Wesley. It'll be Wesleyception.
You guys are looking at this way wrong. You do understand that the reason everybody's excited in that scene is because of Worf's cake. His enthusiasm is rubbing off on everybody else in that room. Do you remember how excited he was? I can't stress enough how ridiculously excited Worf. This is the most excited we ever see Worf. And we see him get married, like, and have all these relations with a really, really attractive woman. And he never gets as excited as he does about this cake. So I think that's what everybody's enthusiasm comes from.
Are you saying this entire episode is a drug-induced coma from consuming Worf's cake?
I'm not saying that.
Well, it's a dessert. It's a dessert-centric episode.
That's true. It is.
It is.
Not since the Sumerian sunset graced this fine ship have we had such delectable desserts.
What does it say about Worf's cake, though, that Troy goes to Tin Forward and gets chocolate ice cream and all instead of having the cake?
Well, unfortunately, Worf, he read the ingredients wrong and only made one. So that was for Wesley, and no one else got a slice.
I think it's because you use a fork with a cake and not a spoon. And I think, anyway, yeah.
Right.
We're not going to go there.
I'm just going to sip of my coffee here. Y'all can talk.
I asked you if you see this as a Wesley episode because, I mean, it's a Wesley episode, and he, with the help of Robin Loeffler, solved the problem here. But the story... Like, you could take Wesley out of the story and put someone else in the story, and the story would still be fine as it is. Someone else could solve this problem of the Katarians trying to take over the Federation by introducing this game to it. So it's not like this is a story that could only be told with Wesley.
Someone like Lieutenant O'Brien, he could have solved it, right?
I see that credit.
I have that... Yes, when Wesley beams on and they show O'Brien and he's got two pips on his collar now, and I was thinking, oh, it's the what rank is O'Brien game. Because you never know how many pips O'Brien's going to have on his collar on the Next Generation.
Well, and it's the first time he actually calls ahead, you know, maybe I shouldn't just go barging around the ship like it's my own personal playground. Maybe I should call ahead to see if there, you know, maybe some alien delegation going on, or... I don't know. Maybe the Cardassian showed up today. The Enterprise is just so busy.
You know, I think this part shows. I mean, again, I don't hate Wesley at all. I enjoy the episode. It's fine. But like, I think this part shows exactly why Wesley is so irritating. It's like, they're in a very important meeting. Well, can I just go in there and say hi? No, they're in a very important meeting. What part of that do you not understand, cadet? You can't just waltz in into the middle of a mission briefing and say hi.
Just because you have pockets doesn't mean you get to decide who goes to what meeting.
And the one thing, too, is that we see... I think this is before the first duty, presumably. So I believe this is the first, like, the instance we see of the Deep Space Nine Voyager uniform, right? Like, this is like the precursor to what we see later on, the later Trek uniforms, the post TNG pre first contact uniforms that we see.
But they're not like the workman jumpsuit fit though.
Right.
That you get on DS9. They're not that loose baggy.
They don't have the blue underoos. Well, I mean, I will admit one cool part about seeing Cadet Crusher was, you know, at least for me in universe, you got to hear a little bit more about Starfleet Academy at this point. Which you know, I always find interesting. You always hear Starfleet Academy. You always hear the science courses, the mathematics courses. But did you catch one of the things he has to take? Creative writing. So Wesley is having to take some creative writing courses. So, you know, Chris, Jake Sisko would have been able to major maybe in English there at Starfleet Academy if he had wanted
to.
So
he could have gone there and pursued his writing career. Yes.
So,
and I'm not sure how old Picard is, but do we have a timeline on Boothley? Because if he was groundskeeper, or at least even just at Starfleet Academy when Picard was there carving, you know, those initials into that tree, are we sure he's not all this time a species 8472 alien? Because
that's what I was going to say.
Very long lived.
Yeah. He is species 8472. Yeah.
He's actually the fourth. He's the fourth incarnation of Boothby. He's actually regenerated three times.
But, is he a Vorta?
I have heard, and maybe you guys can corroborate this or not. But in my recent rewatch, you know, doing some sort of background research, I have heard that Boothby, they were going to make him the Traveler or something. Like he was supposed to be. They were going to somehow make them the same character, and like, he was just keeping an eye on people, I guess, or something. So maybe
that would make sense.
They never really explain
I could see that.
But I like how Starfleet Academy is always described as basically college. You know, oh, the pranks. Oh, the, you know, it's not this lofty ideal of the future. No, it's college. It's just college.
Chili sauce in the shower. Yeah.
In the sonic shower. Typical. So it's future, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then how do we feel like that the Sadie Hawkins dance has survived to the 24th century? You know, that's so much for utopian
the
future.
The dancing
that's
doctor.
All I can say.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did like the Data interplay because, I mean, we would all have to wonder what Data would have been like in the Academy. And I do like how he, you know, when Wesley talks about, oh, I got him back, Data has that moment of, should I reprimand him? No, wait a minute. I want to be one of the boys. Good for you.
Right.
And also, it must have been weird for Data because, like, we see him as a fully matured member of the crew. But, I mean, imagine they stick him in the first year of Starfleet Academy and he's this full grown dude. Like he's not like younger Data. He's just the same Data that we see. So it must have been really creepy for him to be like, you know, in the locker room or something, like when they were, you know, doing sports spaceball. And like, so I guess I would understand why that he would kind of experience
his date was standing on his feet as they danced at the Sadie Hawkins dance. You know,
he would have been chaperoning.
You're saying it would have been weird for the other cadets in the locker room, in the shower, during the Academy Parisi Squares Championship? Is that what you're saying? And Data was in there?
Wouldn't you think? Think about it. You're 18, and you enter.
It's okay. He's French.
Have you written a fanfic about this? I'm a little concerned, Daniel.
No. I'm just thinking. Like, imagine you're 18 and you go.
Yes, apparently.
And you go to the Academy and there's this 30-year-old man robot there. And I love Data, but it's still weird, right? I don't know. And he's fully functional. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just a strange
Apparently
situation.
It does, Daniel. We're stopping the running.
We had
we're
to go
focus
there.
On Daniel's yes. issues right now.
Okay. Here's another question while we're talking about Data to move us off of this topic before we go any further off the rails.
Thankfully.
Doesn't Dr. Soon think that the placement of this off switch is a design flaw in Data? And don't you think that at some point Data would decide to not let people sneak up behind him?
Yeah, so, is the best place to put it on your back?
Right. Beverly just reaches down there and flip, and then Data is off. Going around a corner. Like Data could catch his uniform on a corner. And it might knock the switch into off mode.
But this is important because this begs the question then, Chris. Where do you think is a more appropriate place for Data's off switch?
See more in Daniel's fanfic, Data in the locker room.
I think that you should have to open a panel in order to get to the off switch. I don't think someone should be able to just reach up and hit the off switch.
Like maybe rotate his wrist like 180 degrees and like a combination lock kind of dial in his off sequence or something. something that humans would definitely not be able to do.
I'm sorry. All I'm picturing is like somebody walking up to Data, like they're going to their locker and like his nose, like, okay, two times clockwise, you know, one time counterclockwise. Like,
but like a little pull the ears. Listening device to Data. Where is it? Click.
I just found that odd. And then Beverly. The other thing I found odd about that scene, and which we learn later on when Wesley and Leffler are doing their investigations, is that so Beverly, she severs some connections in Data's positronic brain. Later, Wesley tells Robin, there are only two people on this ship that know enough about Data to do this, Geordi and my mother. And I'm thinking, Geordi, yes, I get it. Of course Geordi knows, but Beverly knows enough about Data's positronic brain. She's a physician. She's not an engineer. I thought that was kind of odd. Did that
Chris,
catch
can you say that sentence one more time, but say it a little more crabbier?
It's one of those moments where because of the story, like, so Beverly needs to be the one who did it because it's Wesley and his mother is sabotaging Data. And so she's one of only two people who know enough about Data to do this. I thought that was a little bit weird because Data's a computer. It's more of an engineering problem.
You mean sabotage?
Sabotage.
Yes. She opened Data's head and she threw her wooden shoes into Data's head and closed the panel.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. And that is one thing that really sticks out to me and really bothers me. And it's not just this one instance. We get this all the time. Like, Beverly is always, like, working on Data, like, whenever he has a problem. And it's like, no, this doesn't make any sense. He doesn't have veins and organs.
Well, you'd think she would have been given his full medical record, and she is responsible for the health and welfare of all the crew. So I would have to believe there is like a special subsection. If your crewmate is an android, make sure they are, you know, performing their regularly scheduled maintenance.
But he's the only one in Starfleet.
No.
He does have some bioelectric, you know.
No, produce. I'm sorry. If you prick him,
does he not leak?
Does he not leak?
He may leak, but he doesn't bleed.
I think that Voyager, the ship itself, has more bioneural gel in it than Data does.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And it's like, okay, you have 1,000 people on this ship, and you don't have one cyberneticist on the ship. Like, so there should be like...
They always have to travel with Data.
But they've got, at least on Kirk's Enterprise, they've got a meteorologist. but Picard's Enterprise does not have a cyberneticist.
Well,
even
the problem
though they
have
an android bridge crew member.
The person with the most expertise is the actual android. So the only one who's actually
what
managed
could go
to build
wrong?
Another android is the android. So,
but I mean, even if they had to radio Maddox, like that would make sense because he's an expert, and why not? That would, but Beverly,
because he would just say, "Oh, he's not working. Just take him apart. Take him apart.
Just turn him off and on again.
Tear him apart.
Tried that.
Step one: disassemble him."
The close-up on his eyes is the blue screen of death.
They have standing orders to never ever phone Maddox, Daniel. Never.
Those are just one-way transmissions. Data sends
into a black hole.
He never leaves the boarding express.
What if there were an episode where Data's malfunctioning and they're forced to call Lore and bring him in to help fix him? That would be
Lore
a great story.
Lore is kind of like Loki, I think, right? And so that makes sense because as we see now, like that's the thing to do. You call your evil stepbrother. And he comes
what
in
could possibly go
him.
Wrong?
Well, if I remember our previous episode of Earl Grey, Mrs. Sci-Fi would disagree that Lore is exactly like Loki.
That's because he's not played by Tom Hiddleston, who women flock over for some crazy reason. I don't know why.
All right. Well, let's talk about Leffler a little bit.
Speaking
of course, we have to talk.
Or for the rest of the time. Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to the Leffler Room.
That's really, you know, Philip did an outline for the show because my outline was just Leffler. Item one, Leffler. That was just pretty much it. That was the only thing I was planning to talk about.
Leffler, her face. Leffler, her uniform choice. Leffler, her drink.
Leffler, you know, she has that dress on and she has the tights and the shoes and they're all the same color. It reminds me of how, though... She pulls it off. I have to say, she pulls it off. In football, I hate these uniforms that are popular these days where the jerseys and the pants are all the same color. The single color football uniforms I don't like. But when she's sitting there in this outfit, that's what I'm thinking of. It's the one color outfit, but she pulls it off.
See, it makes me think of the film like White Christmas where they in the production department their pants, socks, and shoes were all identical, and it basically the color just bled into the floor as they danced.
You know, one thing about Leffler I can't understand. Exactly what is her way of looking at conduit configurations that's so funny? There was some nerdy talk in this episode, and this is coming from a nerd.
She spells out words as they crawl through.
I think she gives them all names. You know, she has her balls, and she gives names to all the conduit connections.
So, all right, if we're going to bring up Leffler.
Did you really think we weren't going to bring up
Leffler? Well, no, I was going to ask you, Chris, personally, like, what is your favorite Leffler moment? Because us lucky Earl Grey members have the unique chance to talk to Chris about Leffler for the entire episode. So I'm curious, what is your, like, what, why do you love Leffler? So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand she's very, very attractive, but what is it about Leffler in this episode that just draws you to her, to make her a meme? I mean, she's a meme at this point, a Trek FM meme. So what is it that you love so much?
She is. It's just her personality. It's just Ashley Judd. And at that time for Ashley Judd, she just has that, how do you describe it? It's like a cute personality. I think it's the scene when they're in 10 Forward, when they're sitting there at the table, because she's in her civilian clothing at that point. That's my favorite scene.
I mean, how do you put in words when someone can turn on the whole world with their smile? What's that called?
They've Lefflerized the world. That's what it's called.
What is it with Commander LaForge that he gets all these sort of cute ensigns running around engineering? You never see a cute ensign in the science section or in security. Yeah. It's Geordi who gets these, you know, whether it's Sonia Gomez or Robin Leffler. Geordi knows how to pick them. There's something about the way he sees them.
He picks them. That's the thing. He's hoping that eventually he's going to pick one who will go out with him. Eventually.
So once it's not so creepy, once they're like 5 or 10 years older, then he can make his move.
I was going to say, so wait. In the beginning, you were saying this episode could have been written without Wesley, and any other actor or character could have replaced it. This is why it was written with Wesley and not Chief O'Brien or Geordi.
No, I didn't say any other character could do it. I'm just saying that Wesley himself was not critical. It didn't have to be Wesley.
And he was thinking he himself, Chris, could have played the Wesley part just fine. Yeah. And then, you know, solved the problem and kissed Leffler at the end of the episode. So,
yeah, I mean, speaking of which, Chris also has his fanfic called Ensign Chris Jones and Ensign Leffler Go on a Date. I don't know if anyone's read it, but we'll post it in the show notes, I think.
Not a great title. Not a great title, but...
You know, that is law number 97. That date is mandatory.
Be careful what you wish for. Oh, Chris, by the way, your neutrinos are drifting.
I love that line. She has a lot of laws, though. You know, you've got, of course, law number 1, you can only count on yourself. Law 91, always watch your back. Law 104 was a little odd. Always wash behind your ears. I mean, it's kind of common sense to me. Do you need a law for that?
Maybe she picked it up from a Ferengi.
Nothing worse than a dirty Ferengi ear.
When they stopped over, yeah, they ran into Quark.
I'm telling you, that would be a conversation.
I mean, and some people may know this, but just as a note for fans of Ensign Leffler, she does live on in the books in New Frontier. Yes. And so she is assigned to... that ship, or ships, I suppose, there's actually two.
The Excalibur, so, yeah.
She does live on in the books.
She actually becomes she's the ops officer, if I remember correctly, on the Excalibur. She does live on.
If she does not eventually become counselor of the Titan in an ironic twist, then I don't want to know about it, because that's what happens in my mind, so.
Okay, boy. I don't think that Daniel just has some fanfic. He's got like a whole bookstore filled of his own fanfic. All kinds of stuff happening in the Star Trek universe.
It's very dark in there.
Oh, you have no idea.
He has lots of pads stack up on his desk, because you can't put more than one story in one pad. So.
That's right.
But Philip, you in the outline, you asked about Leffler, just another pretty face or a potential for more. Now, Leffler does appear in Darmok. She appears here in the game, and those were the only two roles. What do you guys think about if she could have become one of these recurring characters, like, and I hate to say like Ensign Ro, because I know that you guys love Ensign Ro to the point where Ensign Ro is better than Captain Kirk and everyone else in Star Trek. But
I believe that's in a direct quote.
Have you been reading Daniel's blog?
But seriously though, like a character who does start to appear periodically on the show, and we start to kind of get to know that character as a member of the crew. She's not in every episode, but she's there. Could you see Leffler as being more through the course of the series? Or do you think that she just works here because she can have that relationship with Wesley and they can come together and they can get their young geek love on as they save the ship from Riker's creepy alien love?
I think that this is an interesting like kind of thought experiment, because I think that if TNG were made today, we would get a lot more of these type of characters. We would see, Leffler from season 3 to season 7 or 3 to season 5 or whatever. Like, you would see like a lot of these background characters become infrequent regulars, because that's how television is made today. It's much different now, obviously, than it was made then. And I wish we did get to see more. She is attractive, and she has a charm about her. She has a very like you said, like
she has a charm about her. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it would have been cool. I agree with you in the same way with Gomez, though a little bit slightly less so with Ensign Gomez, but I think it would have been cool to like, just to see their characters grow. Hey, maybe by the end they become a lieutenant and they save the ship once. Yeah. Like, maybe they have one episode dedicated to them, and then they just show up as background bits for the rest of the, you know, the rest of the series. But it adds flavor and texture and history to the show. And I think that they should have done it a little bit more.
I think similar to another sci-fi show, you have something like Stargate SG-1, where it had a very large background cast of these small characters that would pop up, and some would even have their own, you know, spin-off, you know, episode focused. And I think I would have liked to see that, to see more episodes like Lower Decks, and you see more of these background characters that are, you know, obviously manning all the stations, because no one on the bridge is doing anything. Those three department heads. But I think that would have been great to see even more of, besides these handful of episodes, much more Leffler.
Yeah.
Well, this episode actually features, I think, almost every secondary character, because you even get Nurse Ogawa in the turbolift, plus Chief O'Brien, or she's Lieutenant O'Brien. And, you know, so I think we all...
Chief Lieutenant O'Brien.
Yeah, maybe Dr. Salar was in the back of a scene or something and we didn't see her, but, you know.
If only.
And you know what level Nurse Ogawa is on in the game, right?
47. Oh, yes, 47. 47, yep.
47, of course, right. Yes.
And she just... So the one thing, real quick, I just want to mention about that scene with Nurse Ogawa in the turbo lift is that she says, like, he gets in the turbo lift, and he goes to 36, deck 36, which is the bottom of the ship, and she just stays on the turbo lift, which means she's just sitting there for the, I don't know how long until somebody finds her, because at the end when Data's like, oh, we're just going to flash the lights and everything is fixed. But there are no,
don't you know, Daniel? This is season 5. This is after Argyle's been kicked out of the Jeffries tubes. He now sails his gin down on the very bottom of the ship, the last deck. It's the same place where on the Enterprise E, the Enterprise has that bottomless pit. If you go to the bottom, where Riker can kick the Riemann down, it's just a bottomless pit at the bottom of the ship. That's where Argyle hangs out.
Yeah.
The D has the same thing down there. We just don't get to see it very often. That's where Ogawa was going. Yeah. But I like your point about, and the charm factor is the thing too with me, seriously, with Leffler, because the character on Enterprise that I like, and I often say that is my Leffler of Enterprise, is Crewman Cutler, because she also has this charm to her. And I like when there are these secondary characters who are there often enough that you feel like they're part of the crew and you kind of get to know them. It's another thing with DS9 having that huge cast of secondary characters who are almost as important as the primary characters. Even though if you count up the number of episodes they're in, they're not in as many episodes as you think they're in, but you feel like you really get to know them because they actually flesh out those characters. So I'd like to see that. And it would also have allowed something like in Emissary on DS9, when O'Brien goes back to the Enterprise and he's on the bridge, and that random officer woman who we've never ever seen before that has the same haircut as O'Brien comes up to him and says, oh, I think Picard's over there in his ready room. You could have had a character like Leffler. I don't know if they could get Ashley Judd to come in and just do one appearance on a show like that, but you could have a character like that who could be the person on the bridge. So you feel like, oh, I know that person.
Yeah. And I think that the most perfect example of that, honestly, is O'Brien, like before Deep Space Nine, obviously. But, like, he's in the pilot. And then we see him occasionally, and actually fairly regularly, but he's a character that we do get to see. And then he doesn't have a name. Then he gets a name. He never actually really gets a rank until he gets on Deep Space Nine. But, like, he's a character that we do get to kind of, he gets an episode or two, but he's never ever pushed to the forefront. He's always like, just, oh, this is going to be an episode with O'Brien in it. And I think that they could have done that with, like, five more characters and totally been okay. Yeah. And I think that in the next Star Trek, we're going to see that. We're going to see, probably. We're on this ship, yeah, and there are all of these people, and they don't get shifted.
Very much an ensemble cast.
Yes. Yeah. Which Deep Space Nine does, like Chris mentioned.
So Chris, do you have a version of The Next Generation where Ashley Judd was Leslie Crusher? And so season five, no. She could have, you know, gone to the academy, come back, been, you know, an ensign.
Yeah. She saves the ship almost every episode in the first season.
Oh, is this a Leslie episode? Oh.
I don't know. I think people would complain
a lot. Smiling
face
again.
I think people would complain a lot less if it was Ashley Judd instead of Will Wheaton.
Well, plus in that timeline, there's that great episode of Big Bang Theory where they have the Leslie Crushers shirts on. Yes.
Yep.
So, okay, one other serious item I want to touch on here before we get to the end of the discussion is the dangers of technology, because what I find interesting watching this episode now that I didn't pay attention to even like halfway between when this first came on in 1991 and where we are now. So even if I go about like 10 years from now, the episode was already quite old. But the game itself, it reminds me of smartphones. And there's that scene where Wesley and Leffler are sitting in 10 forward and they look over and they've got that one crew member over there sitting by the windows, kind of leaning over in a daze with this game thing in front of their eyes. And it reminded me of everyone you see, like here on the train, people walking down the sidewalk, in restaurants, everywhere. Everyone is staring into their smartphones now. That's what this looks like. Everyone on the ship has this thing in front of their eyes. It's a very good warning of the dangers of technology and technology addiction, even before we really had those things in our own lives.
Oh, are you saying something, Chris? I was leveling up on Candy Crush. What was it?
Yes, Philip was just staring into that. Did someone poke you while you were doing it as well?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you said that, I was about to say, you know, I watched this episode and I wrote a little note here that said, what's the metaphor here? Like, in other words, okay, is this just someone taking over the ship, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm like, is there something more to this episode other than someone trying to take over the ship? And so when you brought up that point, I thought, I mean, yeah, and again, I don't know in 1991 what they could have been thinking of, or even if they were trying to think of something, but it is interesting about, you know, you have a game where, and I don't know how far we want to go with this, when you have a reward, you enjoy the reward. I mean, cough. Yes, there's definitely an acting challenge for every actor in this episode. But anyway, so, you know.
Well, I think, if I can just interject, I think that sure. Gates McFadden, she pulled off getting the reward a whole lot better than Wesley and Leffler did when they were pretending to be doing the game.
That's because you can never pretend as well as the real thing.
What are you saying, Daniel? What was going on the set? what directions were being given by Corey Allen to Gates McFadden during that scene?
All I'm saying is, as an older woman, perhaps Gates McFadden is a little more seasoned in experiences than the younger cast members were. So...
I think this ready room is going to be only about two thirds of the recorded length by the time I get the final cut.
Oh Oh, man.
Well, they just had a lot of air quotes around endorphins. So pretend the game is giving you lots of endorphins right now. And everyone's like, and also, yeah. I mean,
if we're going to give any context at all to Troy's chocolate speech, you know, I mean, that's basically what this whole episode is about.
You know, this is the thing about that scene also, is that, first of all, I wonder if all the lines were scripted. Because when Riker says to Troy, "Would you like me to leave you two alone?" And she laughs. It felt like such a genuine laugh. It felt like Frakes just threw that line out and Marina laughed, because you know how their friendship is. It felt that way. And so that whole thing where she's describing the experience of eating the chocolate, I felt like that was Marina harassing Jonathan by trying to make that as suggestive as possible throughout the entire scene.
And really the thing is, a lot of people look at TNG and say, this is a very stuffy, stodgy, sexless show. Just show them that scene. That's all you have to do. Nothing else. You don't have to give them context. Just show them the scene.
I am Joy.
Just show them the scene where Troy is doing that.
I was expecting the woman at the next table to go, "I'll have what she's having."
Exactly. It's that obvious. It's that bad. But
yeah. You
know. Oh, goodness. I agree with Troy, by the way. Chocolate is a serious thing.
It really is. But back to the technology thing, like, I don't think that they were anticipating smartphones in particular. But I do think, you know, science fiction, obviously, you're always anticipating future technologies. And even at that time, you know, computers were becoming more commonplace in homes. You were starting to have mobile phones around. More people had those at that time. Not the tiny ones we can stick in our pocket now, but the technology was developing. And, of course, television, you know, people are spending hours and hours watching television. It's just kind of a cautionary tale of technology really taking over and how you really, really would get lost in something like that. And how technology does affect our perceptions of the world and the pleasure centers of the brain, as Wesley and Robin so deftly illustrated through their very, very quick analysis of the brain. It's actually an episode that reads better now than it did at the time that it was made.
And Chris, I know you personally aren't a huge fan of this company, but this is like super weird. Like, this is Google Glass. This is what we're seeing now. This is like, how weird is, like, isn't that strange that that's what this is? Like, I mean, you say that you see like kind of like an analog between like a connection between people on their smartphones, kind of just gazing into their smartphones. But if you give it 5 years, I think it might be commonplace to see someone at a restaurant gazing into their glasses, just kind of staring dumbly into space. I don't think that's unreasonable to think that that's a possibility within 5 years. So you're absolutely right. That's exactly what's happening right now.
Although I think there is a big difference in the fact that in the game, it somehow pushes past, you know, the blood-brain barrier to directly affect your brain chemistry. Google Glass has not quite mastered that technique yet.
There's an app for
not
that.
Yet, Darren, but Daniel said give them 5 years. What do you think is going on in all these big floating barges that they're parking on the coast?
They're watching episodes
of
Star Trek and trying to figure out how to mine it for the next technology wave.
That's right.
But it seems that way.
I also like how, and even now, like, addictive games on your smartphone or whatever device, like, they don't have to be good. You know, like, all it has to be, like, in this episode, two things. One, the game in this episode, it's all about leveling up, right? And that's all you need for an addictive game. It's just something that levels up, because then you're chasing the virtual dragon. I don't know what you would call it, but you know, you each leveling up, and I'm going to get a higher level. And then also, the graphics are what we call in the business terrible in this episode. And so, but just like any game you play now, it's just a bunch of colored dots or whatever. And that's all. It doesn't matter. You'll still play it till the end of the day.
I will say about the graphics though, Philip, that with the remastering, what they've done is they've taken that game from the original NES to the Super NES.
Oh, all the way to the SNES? Wow. Right.
They have gone 16-bit on us.
We have doubled the bits, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
8 to 16? Okay.
All right. Well, do you have any more thoughts on the remastered elements of the episode? I know I watched it remastered. Who else had a chance to watch the remastered one? Daniel did. Did you notice anything else in the remastered that stood out to you?
Not specifically regarding this episode. I mean, it's obviously like all of the remasters that they've done, it looks fantastic. It really, really does. And I was a little disappointed because I thought because the original game looks so dated, it looks so early 90s CGI. I would think that they might in some way remaster it or even re-render it or make something more exciting happen, because it literally is like, you know, little spaceships going into little cones at like 2 miles an hour. And I thought
you wanted them to put Candy Crush over everything everyone was seeing.
Well, right? That would be funny if they did that, right? Or Farmville or whatever, right? Any Farmville. You know, modern day.
You're walking around the ship and you're planting crops and moving your cows around.
Captain, we're getting a hailing frequency. We have a request.
The bridge is covered, the main view screen is just covered in requests, and you can't see throughout, you know, well, who's attacking us? Oh, let me just close all these little windows. They just keep popping up.
I can't see there's a pig standing in front of the enemy ship.
There wouldn't be so many badmirals if they all had to help each other and cooperate to make the best farm that they could. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, they all get those invites, and that's why they turn badmirals, because who really likes those?
Yeah. I don't know, but then everyone would be working on the farm, all the admirals, except for Nechayev. She would cruise in her limo and get out wearing her cowskin coat with the splotches all over it.
Yeah. With her cigarette.
And by limo, you mean, you know, Excelsior class starship, because, you know,
the hood. That's what
they all
travel in. It would probably
Federation
be the hood.
Starships.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Admirals, all admirals get to choose their own starship asterisk, and at the bottom it says Excelsior class only.
Randomly, I mean, for as much as the game is terrible, as far as the actual game.
Wait, the game or the episode?
Yeah. No, well, we'll get to the rating at the end. But I was watching this on Netflix personally, but there are actually some outstanding shots of the D in this episode. You have that underside shot, which I don't think we ever see, but it was sort of an interesting contrast of like, cause there are actually some great exterior shots in this episode. I would say this is probably in top 10 for the best exterior shots we ever see of the ship.
Yeah. That's what made the season 1, you know, remastered DVD worth it, because, oh, you'd be watching, you know, Justice, and then it would just go, it would go to this beautiful exterior, and you go, okay, that was a nice little treat. Oh, back to the planet. And, you know, that really got me through the season 1 rewatch, was those exterior remastered shots are just beautiful. Yeah. And I agree, this episode does have some nice ones.
Don't forget the season 1 remastered discs. You can spot a lot more people wearing scants than you could in the original broadcast episodes.
So what
off if in the background, Leffler, you can see people in the backgrounds.
What if Leffler wore a scant, Chris? How would you feel? Would this rating automatically bump up like a point or two, or just out of curiosity?
No, it'd go down. I don't think she would look good in a scant. No.
Right, what about if she had that frizzy Troy hair from Encounter at Farpoint and the braid?
Or the Troy uniform. Wait. Nope, I've discovered it. I know how to get... Chris will give this episode a perfect 10 if Leffler performed Troy's chocolate speech during the 10-forward scene. Then it would be a
okay,
perfect...
Yeah, yeah. I give it 11 out of 10 for that.
And Wesley's prositrons are drifting.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, any final thoughts on the episode as we wrap up here?
There's a lot of better season 5 episodes. I just want to throw that out there. That's my only thing. I, you know, Earl Grey on here talking about TNG. I just want to throw that out there. You know, we have some good ones.
I'd say, you know, the actual plot with the game is an interesting aspect, and it is very Star Trek-y. You know, something slowly, you know, takes over the entire ship. This actually tends to happen quite a bit to the Enterprise D crew, whether it's some sort of flash and everyone loses just enough memory to make those turbolift rides awkward. And, you know, once or twice this does happen to the crew. You'd think they'd put some sort of failsafe backup, although those aliens apparently knew how to deal with Data and just make him a bartender. But so in that aspect, I liked it for its, I guess, Star Trekiness. It was a very good Star Trek story. And at the end, you just get smug Picard again talking to the, you know, voice on the screen saying, "Ha ha, you thought you'd had control of my ship, but now," you know, and then he signals and Livingston, you know, shoots a torpedo at him. But so for that aspect, I did enjoy it.
I love that one last week thing, like, "Oh yeah, we'll open up fire," and like Mr. Worf, and they're like, they're bluffing for some bizarre reason. They have like a laser and a heavy rock they can throw at us. So never mind.
Right.
I mean,
like,
did they not think that the Enterprise would lasers sensors?
There is just two, I think, quick things that I want to mention before we close out the show. The first is that we've already broached this throughout the whole episode, but this is like a really sexual episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. Like, and I'm not trying to make this, you know, lighthearted or crap, but it is. I mean, like, everything that happens in this episode seems to be very metaphorical and very like intense. And, you know, we start out with Riker in bed with a lady, and then he shares his ecstasy with everyone on the ship, and things happen. And like, the only way we can get out of this is by involving the most non-sexual character on the show, even though he is fully functional.
I thought you meant Wesley, actually.
No,
I thought you meant Wesley.
I did too.
But even then, like, that's the thing. Like, Chris brought up the scene where like Leffler and Wesley are literally like shivering on the bed together, like trying to like imitate the real effects of this game. So it's actually a very, very sexual.
And then your
episode.
Mom walks in. Oh man! It's so
and then
awful.
Oh my, that was awful, right? And then,
well, it
I
is
just
like
mention-
they walk in and they look and they see them there doing that, and then they all just turn around and leave.
Like, oh, it's okay. Yeah, yeah,
I've got to go.
Oh god! And then the last thing that we didn't get to touch on was the climax. Wow, probably not the best way to put that. After just how I
nice
just
choice
up.
Of words, Daniel.
Yes, but
phrasing.
But there's literally no, I was going to say resolution, but there's honestly no way I can put this without sounding, but the ending of the episode is Data flashing a flashlight in people's eyes. And I think that's kind of a lame ending. I just wanted to bring
you, you wanted to say the end of the episode was Data flashing people on the bridge.
I know. It's also part of Daniel's fanfic number 58 available.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, for me, this episode, it's a fun TNG-style episode. You've got the aliens trying to take over the ship and take over the Federation. You've got fun character interactions. You know, again, you've got the crew kind of forgetting who they are, being taken over, as you say, does happen quite often. And then Leffler's on it. So, you know, there you go. That's pretty much all you need to know about this episode, is that it's the one that features Leffler. So, but no, it's a good like middle of the series TNG episode for me. And I can look at it now and I can see the sort of the technological warnings that we talked about with people gazing into this game and what it's like now when you see people gazing in to, you know, people walking into me in the store because they're gazing into their smartphone instead of looking where they're going in front of them. But of course, that's what we see now. And that wasn't even around us at the time. So, very good episode for me. Anyway, I will. We didn't give our ratings, so I'll give my rating, and then we got to get your ratings. I'm going to give this episode Leffler's Red Dress.
I'm sure you'd like to give that.
Anyway. That's good. I like that one.
How about you, Philip? What's your rating for this?
I give this 4 out of 10 birthmark rumors.
Ooh,
we can do nice. Better, folks. We can do better, and we do better. So,
I'm going to give this 2 red eyes out of 5.
I'm going to give this 13 chocolate sundaes.
Wow, you must be really depressed.
I don't think I've ever seen someone eat 13 chocolate sundaes.
Well.
All right. Very good. All right. Well, it's been fun having all of you guys on the show. I'm glad we were able to get the entire crew of Earl Grey together at this time. So before we go, each of you tell everyone where they can find you online. Of course, you all do the same show together, so one of you can be the spokesperson for Earl Grey.
Yes. You can listen to us each week, Earl Grey, where we talk about all wonderful things, the next generation. Also, we also talk about this episode. But yes, all other wonderful things about the next generation each and every week. But you can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant, NC like North Carolina, where I talk about Star Trek and Doctor Who and government and politics and whatever else hits my whimsy.
And you can find me at Dr. Sci-Fi, that's DrSciFi on Twitter. Love talking about science fiction and especially Star Trek The Next Generation.
Well, thanks, Philip and Darren, for joining us today. And then Daniel's going to hang around to close out the show. And everyone, tune in to Earl Grey. They've always got a hot cup of tea for you over there.
Well, it was great talking to my co-hosts, who I actually get to talk to every week on Earl Grey, which, by the way, if you're listening to this, you should go ahead and check that out.
Yeah, it was great to have all of you together. I think the last time we had you and Philip on, but Darren wasn't able to make it. So always fun to have the whole crew on here. And of course, finally, I got to talk about Leffler on the Ready Room, which I'm sure some listeners would be glad to hear. And they're probably thinking, I need to know more about this. That was just not enough explanation of how the Leffler meme came to be. But
well,
have to delve into that. Maybe on Earl Grey sometime, we can delve more deeply into that topic.
I tell you what, and I think I could speak for everyone on Earl Grey, but when we do our Leffler character insight, Chris, you'll be a guest.
Okay. All right. You can put me down for that in ink. I'll be there. All right. Well, Leffler and the game isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
TOS Remastered with Dave Rossi.
We took one day and we all went down in front of a green screen. I had a Captain Kirk shirt on. I don't remember where I got it from. Oh, yes, I do. My closet.
Earl Grey.
Ensign Row Commentary.
Here we have someone who is kind of bucking authority and is kind of trying to be, to go against the grain, but she does it in a way that shows that she has some sort of depth of character.
The Orb.
His Way Commentary.
I love that he says, what does fun have to do with Major Kira? And James Darren's like, What do you mean, what is fun? Come on.
Face palm.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ready Room.
The Catwalk.
But this was a really, his trainer, Scott Rowe, was talking about in the interview I did with him back in the day, how this was a hard show because normally when they had Porthos, it was Scott and Porthos working. And maybe one other character or two other characters. And these, if you watch how Porthos was in this show, they kind of had him in the quarters with Scott, and I watched most of the show. I didn't see the last nth degree of it. But most of the time, they would do stuff with him, like peeking out of a bulkhead and all that.
To the journey!
USS Voyager.
If it was, like, really blooming with color, you're like, oh, they're going really fast, or something's happening. Like, you could...
Yeah, excitement!
Like, it was instantly... you instantly knew exactly what was going on.
And if Q Jr. is on board, it becomes a disco.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Harlan Ellison
is a crazy person because only a crazy person could come up with such an amazing name for a sci-fi drug. Come on, that's so much better than bath salts. Why don't we call them the Jewels of Sound?
Warp 5.
Trip Tucker.
You know, they're not really career Starfleet people, even though Trip has had a career in Starfleet. He's an engineer, you know, and that's what he does and that's what he loves. And so all this other stuff's really new to him.
Literary Treks.
The Best of Klingons.
We haven't talked about yet, Chris, but there is one Klingon in here that is not like the other.
That's right. One of these Klingons is not like the other. One of these Klingons doesn't belong.
One of these Klingons is a friend of the Federation.
One of these Klingons and Bryce will get along.
Wow, this show has gone off the rails.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of those shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows, and you'll find them in a variety of places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. I don't know, Daniel, if you can pick them up on Google Glass yet or not, but we'll have to work on that. And you'll find links to everything over on the website at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. And Daniel, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on the show today, on Leffler, on the game, on anything we talked about in news. Tell us what your favorite ship design is. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room. And that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums and talk to us and other listeners. Also, don't forget to send us your questions from the fleet. Anything about Star Trek you want us to discuss on the Ready Room, just send that in to us just like Jamie did today, and we'll talk about that during the news segment. You'll also find us in social media. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, and we're on Twitter under username TrekFM. Well, Daniel, when you're not busy writing your next great piece of fan fiction, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, which is probably the easiest way, at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word, where I'm often tweeting about Star Trek frequently or other nerdy topics, and I'm ready and willing to talk about any suggestions you have for future Leffler positions on whether it be the Enterprise or the Titan.
Okay. You mean positions as in mission specialist or someone working in engineering or okay.
Yes.
I just was concerned that Wesley might write in to you.
Which would be understandable.
Yeah, might tweet to you, so I don't know.
Well, if Will Wheaton tweeted to me, then I would be okay with that. So,
very good. All right. And of course, as we've already said, everyone can find you over there on Earl Grey.
That's right.
You can also find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And elsewhere on the network, you can find me on two shows with Matthew Rushing. We do The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine, and we do Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics and interview authors. You can also find me on Warp 5, where we discuss Enterprise, and you can find me on my own interview show, Matterstream, where I talk to actors and scientists and writers and all sorts of people about topics loosely related to Star Trek. Also, before we let everyone go, Daniel, we'd like to ask you again to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors makes it possible for us to bring the Ready Room to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, or with the incredible commerce feature and online store. Create your own space today. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial, and then use offer code TREK12 to save 10%. And remember, choose the annual plan, and you'll get a free custom domain registration as well. Also, there's audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible has more than 150,000 titles on the site right now. New titles are coming all the time. Lots of Star Trek books over there, lots of TNG books, as well as some of the most famous books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. As a TrekFM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just by trying Audible. So go to audibletrial.com/TrekFM and sign up today. Get that free audiobook. Get Dark Mirror that we talked about in news today. And we thank Audible for their support of The Ready Room and TrekFM. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep The Ready Room coming to you each week, and that's by adopting some aliens, or at least some illustrations of aliens by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We have 8 different aliens available. You can get them as badges or art prints. Mix and match. Choose which ones you want in which format. We have different levels of contributions that you can make as well. And your donations help us pay for the costs of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Ready Room and all of our other shows to you every week. Again, you'll find those at trek.fm/donate. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going. All right, Daniel. Well, I'm going to wander off to 10 forward and see if Troy has finished teaching Leffler how to describe the eating of a chocolate sundae. Oh,
yeah. All right, Chris. Well, it's time to stick a drifting neutrino in it because the Ready Room is done.
I've been thinking about doing some acting someday. If I ever do make it out to L.A., can I give you a shout? crash on your couch. If you hear of any roles that are floating around, that would put me and Ashley Judd making out in a steamy love scene, I'd work for it too. If phones are down, just ask around, you'll get a hold of me. Cause I'm one of the most famous people. Talking to one of the most famous people in the country. 6-pack. It was, wasn't it? You're in that movie, 6-pack. You look a lot older and younger on TV. Gaining weight for a role or something. Man, I'm serious about that ass. Some famous people, if you know what I mean.